Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deese Medical Center. I am your host, Lori Foster, and today we're going to be covering a very important topic with one of our registered nurses who is a certified sexual assault nurse examiner. Before we dive into the topic, I do have a couple of announcements I'd like to share. April is Foot Health Awareness Month, and our feet are one of the most frequently ignored parts of our anatomy. This month, pledge to keep your feet happy and healthy. For all of your foot health needs, call podiatrist Dr. Benjamin Willis at Van Deese Family Health Clinic at 515-832-7800. In addition, the month of April is Occupational Therapy Month, and 21st Century Rehab is celebrating by offering free 30-minute exams with one of our occupational therapists. So, if you are a person who has issues with range of motion or injuries to your hand, wrist, elbow, arm, or shoulder, maybe you need some neurological rehabilitation, you can sign up by calling 515-832-7735. We do have two occupational therapists here at Van Deese Medical Center, Diana Raska and Sarah Zorn, each with additional certification that I'd like to mention. Diana is actually certified with the LSVT Big program, so she works closely with patients who have Parkinson's disease. She also offers a support group for those and their caregivers. Sarah Zorn is also certified as a lymphedema therapist. So if you're someone who possibly experiences some chronic swelling, she would be the perfect resource for you. Again, this is during the month of April. You can sign up for a free 30-minute exam with one of our occupational therapists. You can call 21st Century Rehab at 515-832-7735. And we are going to dive into our program now. April is also Sexual Assault Awareness Month. This is a time where there's a campaign that aims to increase awareness about the causes and risk factors for sexual assault, and we want to empower individuals to take steps to prevent sexual violence in all of our communities. On today's program, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking with one of our registered nurses about this public health crisis and the services and support which are available at Van Deese Medical Center for victims of sexual assault. Joining us this morning is registered nurse Cindy Sinclair. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the program today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
This is such an important topic to be talking about. I really appreciate you being on the program to discuss. Why don't you start by sharing with listeners a little bit about you, your background, experience, how long you've been a nurse, and then even how long you've had your certification, too.
Okay. I've actually worked for the hospital for 34 years, but I've been a nurse for 17 of those years. And in those 17 years, 16 of those have been spent in the emergency department. And then when we moved over from the old hospital, that's when I became a sexual assault nurse. I took my classes online. It was 53 hours worth of classes. I then flew to Colorado, did 3 days of intensive classes out there with IAFN, which is the International Association of Forensic Nurses, who sponsored the program. They were reaching out to the rural areas, trying to get nurses to help with this so that people didn't have to be transported to larger facilities. And so I did that, and I've been doing it ever since. So,
terrific. Thank you. There is such an important need to have people like you in all hospitals, in rural or in metro areas. We're very fortunate at Van Deese Medical Center to have two certified SANE nurses. We also have Melissa Vaughn. And this is unique because there are not a lot of critical access hospitals that have this certification and have resources like you that are available. Let's talk a little bit about just the importance and why we do need to raise awareness about this topic, about sexual assault.
Sure. So approximately every 68 seconds in the United States, someone is sexually assaulted. That equates to 1 in 6 women and 1 in 33 men, which seems like a lot. And especially with our rural population, it's probably less, but it still is a national average. So with a sexual assault nurse, we're available 24/7 to be able to help them become survivors from their experience.
How does your role as a sexual assault nurse examiner help to support victims of sexual assault?
So when a victim presents to the emergency room, they're immediately made safe. That is their utmost importance, their safety, because you need to remove them from the public eye. You need to make sure that they feel safe in an environment and have the comfort that they need from their traumatic experience, so that as they move along, they become, instead of a victim, they move on to survivor. So then when they're safe, then they call me, and then I call the advocate, and we meet at the hospital. Sometimes the advocate beats me here, sometimes I beat the advocate here, but we're both there for the patient. And the utmost important thing is that immediately they need to make sure that there are no physical injuries. If they need x-rays, if they need repair, like if they have a laceration, if they need a CT, if they need any type of x-ray, that is all done prior to my starting the exam. And when the first thing we do is make sure that they're comfortable, you explain everything, you explain what the kit is. Every patient gets a kit. I know it sounds kind of simple, but it's just a kit that is across the nation. It's the same. And it involves gathering swabs, it involves gathering some blood, taking pictures, and you just need to make sure that they understand throughout the exam what is going to happen up front. Of course, they have to sign consent for that, and you have to make sure that they're able to understand that. Sometimes if there's a language barrier, then you have to involve something more. Someone to come in and help you with that. And people are available for that also. And then you just need to make sure that they understand each process and why you're doing it. And at any time, they can stop and say, no, I'm not doing that. Because no is acceptable for even an exam. If they're not comfortable with it, you just stop right there. And that's as far as you go. And as mandatory reporters, we do have to report this. And the police are available to talk to the patient. If they're not comfortable with that at that time, then they usually leave a card for them. Because if you think about it, when you have a traumatic experience, everything is fight or flight, and it's immediate. And it usually takes 2 sleep cycles for a person to start remembering things that happened when it's a traumatic event. So a lot of times as time goes on, they will remember more things that happened. This happened. You know, you're gathering DNA evidence. You're gathering anything. I mean, it is a forensic exam, so that's what you're doing, is gathering information to help for the prosecution.
Mm-hmm. You know, it is almost hard for so many people to imagine, because if you're a person that has experienced an event like this, it is traumatic. So then, like you say, to just come forward to share that is a huge step, mm-hmm. Which is part of the education and awareness of this topic, for people to know there are resources available. And in Cindy's role, that's why it's so critical to make these individuals feel comfortable knowing and like they have just been through this traumatic event. And the process itself, what is done here, can be overwhelming. So it's allowing an environment of trust to take place, and so that those necessary steps can be right. can be done.
Right, right. And it's challenging. At some point, you do earn the trust of the survivor, and because you are it, you are, and it, like I said, by making them safe, that helps. And then just coming forward and telling their story, and a lot of times it's fragmented. It's this happened, and then, oh yeah, I forgot that, and, you know, he was wearing this, no wait, you know. And so, as I said, as they move along, things do come forward. And even after two sleeps, more things come forward. And that's why police are patient, or sheriff's department, whichever it is, they are patient in gathering their information, because they know that it will take that much time for the event to come full circle mm-hmm. in their brain. So.
Makes sense. Now, the role of the advocate, mm-hmm. is that for assistance after this process?
So the role of the advocate initially is that they're there as a support system for them, emotional, especially because they have information. A lot of times their phones get taken from them. They or are afraid to use their phone. Maybe the person that did the assault took their phone, has it, has all their information. They can navigate them through that process. They will oftentimes give them a phone to use so that they're able to still be able to reach out to their families and be able to call 911 if they need to. They also provide clothes. They provide a safe place. Sometimes there's not a place for them to go after the event, because maybe the person that assaulted them owns the home that they were assaulted at and live at, and they don't want to go back there. Maybe they have emotional issues that they do not want to go back to their own home. They provide a safe place for them. They provide food coupons, like to go to McDonald's, to go get gas at Quick Star. They have all kinds of gas cards and things like that, that they just have like a bag that they carry for that person. Stress balls are a big thing that they can, when they're talking and, you know, by squeezing that stress ball, that helps relieve that anxiety mm-hmm. and takes the edge off, that they are able to concentrate a little bit better. So there are all kinds of things that they use to help facilitate that patient through and navigate through everything.
Right. And really, it's about providing those basic needs. So, you know, this patient can actually continue on and go through, because going through that, like you say, they may not be returning to where they've been living, and to think that they don't have anything, and there's a lot, you know, what am I going to do about this? How am I going to get there? How do I get a hold of someone? So it is providing those basic needs so that they
can go on. And also they provide aftercare. So 2 weeks post-exam, they need to go back and get retested. Just for their own peace of mind. A lot of times they may need to have stitches removed. They may need to start getting counseling. Again, the advocate helps them navigate along those lines also. And we have great resources here at Van Diest that we're able to help them with. So they can use our facility, or if they're from an outside, say like Des Moines or Fort Dodge, and that has happened before, that they have come here for their exams because they were perhaps assaulted in the area, then we help them navigate to Des Moines. We have resources to contact in Des Moines for that. Waterloo, there are all places all over Iowa that we can help them with.
Wonderful. As you mentioned, these incidents can happen to men and women, girls and boys, people of all ages. Mm-hmm. And if our listeners out there are not someone that's been involved, possibly they may know someone that's maybe been in an abusive relationship or could be someone that experiences sexual assault. What would be some warning signs that you would want to share with listeners?
True warning signs are pulling away from family, pulling away from talking. Like if normally your child comes home and is like, hey, mom, you know, da, da, da. And all of a sudden they're coming home and going to their room and shutting everyone out. Homework isn't getting done. They have trouble concentrating. And it can be of any age. Maybe they were social before and now they're not social anymore. They don't want to leave the house. They're fearful. They don't want to go to family gatherings. You just have to be mindful and watch. And as a parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, you can see those signs and pick up on them and just open the communication to know that there's someone that they can talk to. And if they aren't comfortable talking with you, then reach out and we can help them get to the people that they need to get to, because it's really important that they talk through this and get it out. Just thinking, well, my child doesn't need that. They do. They do. Everyone needs to talk it out and get the help that they need. And it's not just a now thing. It can be a lifelong thing, that it can be just like PTSD. Something will trigger it when they're in their 40s and 50s, and it will all flood back to them. So it's just a lifelong thing to be wary of that. And maybe as a teen, someone didn't talk about it, but now in their 20s, something triggered it that they're able to, that they want to talk about it and let them talk and let them express themselves and not be judgmental and just, you know, listen is the most important thing.
Great information, Cindy. I want to make sure that we spend a little time talking about human trafficking too, because I know that you and Melissa had an opportunity to go to a conference here recently.
Yeah, we did. We went to Okoboji. It was put on by IAFN, and Michael McDonald was the facilitator. He was great. It was a two-day course. Melissa and I were one of three nurses that were there, and just some of the things that we learned, that the human trafficking has really always been around, but it's recently people are becoming more aware of it. And I think part of that is social media and the news, and there are movies that are out about it. The newest movie was Sound of Freedom, which is an excellent movie. If you haven't seen it, go see it, rent it, whatever. It is just really, really good. So human trafficking is how it is defined by Iowa code is any act or sexually explicit performance for which anything of value is given, promised to, or received by any person. And it includes and not limited to prostitution, participation in the production of pornography, or performance in strip clubs, force, fraud, or coercion. It can also be forced labor, which all of those would fall under. And that is labor services are performed or provided by another person or obtained and maintained through any of the following: causing or threatening to cause serious physical injury in a person, physically restraining or threatening to physically restrain another person, abusing or threatening to abuse the law or legal process, knowing, destroying, concealing, removing, confiscating, or processing any actual or purported passport or any other immigration. Basically, forced labor is if you're doing something that you don't want to do, but you don't have a choice in it. So maybe they are holding your passport, maybe they're holding your license. You do this and I'll give it back to you. You do this and I'll give you $100. You do this and so then it goes on and on and on. And then you never get back the things that you are purported to get back. That is how sometimes that happens. But
mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, like you mentioned, there has been much more information available in the media, through social media, to make people aware of human trafficking. And right here in Iowa, because of kind of the interstates that pass through our state, mm-hmm. We are, I don't want to say a hot spot, but with 35 and 80, there is human trafficking that goes on. And I think a lot of people can, in their minds, dismiss that it could be happening in Iowa, but we know it does happen in Iowa.
It does. And it actually can happen in our own community. Recently, a mother shared that her child, at the last minute, was invited to a party out of town. And her child went to the party and there had seen people that they knew from our local area. And so they were like, oh, friends, yeah, people I know. And so kind of edged towards them. And this party was kind of a gathering for, I would say, a human trafficking kind of in that realm anyway. So the girl proposed, oh, hey, let me go buy you some new clothes. Let me go take you out. Let me take you drinking. Let me do this. Let me do that. Oh, you can't drive home. You need to stay. And you need to stay today because I will take care of you. And I will, you know, if you just stay a couple more days, we'll take care of you. And you don't have to go back home. We'll make this fun for you. We'll get you a place to live. We'll do this. We'll do that. And the child said, no, I think I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home. And no matter how much the talk was, they just decided, no, they made the better choice and came home and then told their mother, who contacted Melissa and I. And, we listened to the story and said, I believe that child was on its way to human trafficking. It was a teenager, and it can happen. It can happen right here. Easily, that child could have disappeared, and we would have never seen them again, or maybe, you know, never heard from them again. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. But it can happen, and it can happen right here.
You're right. Scary to think, but so true. And why it's so important to be talking about this topic, what to look for, just to know that these resources are available. Again, Cindy, as a sexual assault nurse examiner, what information do you feel would be most important to get out as we look to close the show?
Just know that you can call the National Sexual Assault Hotline. It's free. It's confidential. It is open 24/7. It is 1-800-656-HOPE. You can also chat online if you don't want to talk to someone. And there are many resources available. Melissa and I are always glad to talk to people. And be able to help people navigate through these things. Even if you have questions, I work in the emergency room. They know how to get a hold of me if someone would call in, and they could always take their name and number, and I can call them back. And as you said, Melissa's in the surgery department. You know, we can always be reached if you have questions.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we are very fortunate to have two certified SANE nurses at Van Diest Medical Center. You and Melissa also support other hospitals, correct?
We can, yes. Yeah, I have been contacted by other hospitals to go, and I know Melissa has also been contacted.
Thank you for being on the program, Cindy. Thank you for all you do here at the hospital and in this specific role. It is very much a needed role, and we appreciate everything you do.
You're very welcome.
Again, I want to get that number out to our listeners, the number 1-800-656-HOPE. And that will do it for our program today. Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Diest Medical Center, where our focus is you.